States Court of Appeals in and for the Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, everyone. The first case to be argued is appeal number 05-1367, Jones Day versus Burge. Mr. Schrader.
May it please the court. For over a decade, since the early 1990s, the Jones Day law firm has maintained exclusive possession, custody, and control over five boxes of attorney work product material which relates to a police board proceeding involving Lieutenant John Burge, which Jones Day handled for the City of Chicago. On April 20, 2004, the magistrate in this Hobley case issued an order that these five boxes of work product documents be produced to the plaintiff's counsel immediately. At the time of the entry of this order, Jones Day was not a party to the case, was not counsel of record for any party, was not the recipient of any Rule 45 subpoena, had not been contacted by the plaintiff's lawyer, had not been involved in the briefing and motion practice before the court, and had no advance notice that this order would be entered.
Counsel, I was on the district court for 15 years. Judge Williams was on the district court. Judge Coffey was a trial judge in Milwaukee for many, many years. And if one thing I learned in the trial court is that we hate discovery disputes. Now, this one, I can't recall seeing a discovery situation with as many hearings, briefs, post-order requests for reconsideration. This has taken on a whole life of its own. Should you have to, in a case like this, have some incredible arguments to make for us to set this all aside and have it go back for a more consideration?
Your Honor, there is only a small part that we're asking be set aside. Jones Day was not involved in any of those discovery disputes. I do understand from the record that they went on for several months, but Jones Day was a non-party, not involved in any of that.
But did Jones Day know what was going on?
No, Your Honor.
Had no knowledge. No,
Your Honor, the
no
first knowledge that we had, the discovery disputes were going on, apparently back in August and September of 2003. There was a back and forth. Jones Day was not retained by the city to do anything, not contacted by the city's attorneys, which was Hinshaw and Culbertson at the time, to do anything. The principal attorney who was involved in the police board proceeding, Ms. Gezzi, had no knowledge of anything going on at the trial court level. No subpoenas had been served on Jones Day. No notices had given to Jones Day. No court papers. Absolutely nothing.
Is it right that all the Jones Day documents for which there is no work product privilege claimed, all those documents were turned over to the city when the city advised Jones Day that there was a grand jury subpoena?
Yes. 52 boxes of non-privileged material was turned over to Hinshaw and Culbertson, which was the city's attorney in the state special grand jury proceeding. And that occurred back in early 2003. And at that time, Jones Day advised both Hinshaw and the city that it was retaining custody of the five boxes of work product material, and asked to be told if and when any privilege log was needed for the special grand jury proceeding. Jones Day heard absolutely nothing for a year. It wasn't until February of 2004, well after all of these discovery disputes that Your Honor makes reference to were underway, that Jones Day received a phone call from a Hinshaw lawyer advising Jones Day and requesting the privilege log. That was the very first contact in a year. Jones Day had no idea that this case called Hobley was filed. Jones Day was not asked to do anything with respect to the Hobley case. No subpoenas were served on Jones Day. We had not been asked by the city to do anything. And in February of 2004, we were asked to do a privilege law.
As I understand the state of the record now, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the city has not challenged the claim that these five boxes are work product.
The city initially...
Are the plaintiffs in this litigation?
Correct. They have not.
They have not.
Correct. We have prepared a privilege log. These are classic work product documents. I've looked at all five boxes. They're yellow pages of attorney notes, summaries of depositions, legal research, classic work product, and that has not been challenged.
It doesn't have much to do with this litigation, but what's the retention policy of records like this in the law firm?
Your Honor, we are presently reviewing that retention policy.
You're going to shorten the time.
We do have policies. Oftentimes, if there is no pending need for any of this documentation, probably in the 11th year, we would be removing this material.
Well, this would have still been caught even if you revised it.
It may have been. That's the subject of tremendous amount of discussion about law firms now with regard to what is the proper length of time.
And of course, your position is they should have subpoenaed those documents directly from you. How would the plaintiff have determined that it needed to subpoena Jones Day? And is there any affirmative obligation the plaintiff has to research which of the defendant's former agents has possession of discoverable documents?
I would say there are several answers to that, Your Honor. A, the police board proceedings back in 1991 were the subject of substantial press reports. I think there's little doubt that most of the people knew that Jones Day represented the city. Beyond that, I assume that in the Rule 26 disclosures that the city made here, they would have notified the other side about Jones Day as a potential witness or individual partners. The plaintiff probably, I don't know this, but they probably asked an interrogatory of the city, asking the city to identify persons with potential knowledge, and Jones Day would have been revealed. It was no secret that Jones Day had previously represented the police board. Any number of discovery devices. Heck, if the plaintiff's attorney had called us, we would have told them.
Should we deal with June Gezzi's testimony and the finding by the court that her testimony was not favorable? Because if we defer to the court's finding that Jones Day had actual knowledge of the duty to assert its work product privilege prior to the April 20th order, shouldn't we conclude that Jones Day knowingly waived the privilege?
I don't believe there's nothing in the record, Your Honor, to support the magistrate's finding. What the magistrate said was that there must have been knowledge by someone in the 700-person Jones Day partnership that had knowledge of the Hobley case and hence was on notice to do an investigation. That was not the testimony. What the magistrate said she wanted was what she called a Rule 30B6 hearing, in which she wanted someone to testify as to all of the knowledge that Jones Day might have had. Ms. Gezzi appeared and testified on her own behalf and also as a 30B6 deposition witness, although this was not a deposition proceeding. And the testimony was that, she had not contacted every single one of our partners and had no knowledge who might have had known about the Hobley case.
But the magistrate judge found that testimony not credible.
No, I think the magistrate actually mischaracterized the testimony and said that Ms. Gezzi had testified that no one at Jones Day knew about Hobley. What she testified to, which is on page 150 of the transcript, I believe, is that she was unaware of any person who knew and had not talked to them and did not know who knew what. So the actual record is there is no evidence that any individual attorney at Jones Day, whether in the Chicago office or any of our other 30 offices around the world, had any knowledge of the Hobley case. Now, the magistrate goes on to say from that premise that there was knowledge, that imposed a duty somehow on Jones Day, a non-party, to immediately begin monitoring the case, seeing what orders may have been entered, talking with the city's counsel in Hobley, contacting the plaintiff's attorney. And I submit that that would be an intolerable burden to be placed on law firms. We cannot go around monitoring whether there might be a lawsuit somewhere in the country that involves one of our former partner or former clients for whom we have retained work product material. What newspapers are we going to read? After we read them, what are we going to do? How many courts do we have to monitor? This would be an intolerable burden, and no law firm would do it.
And in terms of your position as to who has the authority or power to waive any privilege that you have, as I understand your position, it's only Jones Day that can waive it. The city can't waive it on your behalf.
Absolutely correct, Your Honor. In fact, the magistrate cites cases that are not contested that show that we, the law firm, has a work product right just as the city, the former client, has a work product right. Both asserted it here. The city was found, by virtue of all this discovery motion practice, that they may have waived their work product privilege, but whether they choose to waive it or don't waive it has no effect on Jones Day's ability to assert its own work product privilege. And it's particularly the case here because all of these documents for 10 years were in the exclusive possession, custody, and control of Jones Day. Mm-hmm. We have argued, the magistrate judge did not accept this. The magistrate judge has analyzed this case under Rule 34 and a party's obligation to produce documents under Rule 34 and a party's obligation to give a privilege log under Rule 34. Jones Day is not a party. We are not subject to any obligations under Rule 34. The only way that a litigant can get documents in the control, possession of an outside attorney is to issue a Rule 45 subpoena. And that is done routinely in federal cases, in this district and others.
If we were to reverse, the next step then would be Rule 45.
It might be, Your Honor. The plaintiffs have our log now. If they see something on that log that they want to challenge, they would call us up. We would engage in a discussion with them. Yes, they would have to serve a Rule 45 subpoena if Your Honor agreed with us that these documents are in our exclusive possession, custody, and control. That's absolutely what would happen. And we would then use that vehicle, if there was an issue, to contest that.
You're about halfway into your rebuttal, so you might want to save a little time.
We'll do. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Lovey?
May it please the court, counsel. Jones Day wants to litigate an appeal that is not this appeal. They want the court to make a gigantic assumption. Assume we didn't know till April 20th. Assume it all came as a surprise to us that the city had told the court.
Wait a minute. You've argued initially that there's no jurisdiction to entertain this appeal. Are you giving that argument up?
We will, Your Honor. We can win it straight up without it.
That's a good decision.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
Your Honor, what they're saying is let's decide this appeal assuming that the city stood before the district court and said no Jones Day documents are being withheld, no privileges are being withheld, and Jones Day didn't know about that till after the court ruled. But of course, when Jones Day came in and said that's our position, we didn't know, the judge insisted on having a hearing to test that premise.
Yeah, but what I have is a fundamental problem with your argument. I haven't been able to locate any authority suggesting that the city, number one, could waive the privilege. And even if we agree that the magistrate said they didn't know, I don't understand how they get held accountable under Rule 34. They're not a party. There was no Rule 45 subpoena request. The magistrate talking about notice from the law bulletin and all these other things, there's no authority for that.
Your Honor, there was no Rule 45 subpoena because when plaintiff asked the city to produce Jones Day's police board documents, the city said, no problem.
Yeah,
you got
and,
them.
And
you
my
don't
question
need a
is, how can the city waive a privilege of Jones Day?
And what they said, and leave aside the waiver, they said, all right, we the city will make the Jones Day's documents available to you. And furthermore, no privileges are being asserted, nothing is being held back. If Jones Day was truly in the dark about that, they would have a leg to stand on. That's the appeal they want to litigate. But that is not this appeal. Judge Brown made factual findings that in February and in March, Jones Day became aware, subjectively conscious of the score, which is that...
When you say Jones Day, now, as counsel mentions, that's a big law firm. Offices all over the place. This is ancient...
Sorry, Aaron.
Sort of ancient litigation back in 91 or...
700 members?
No, Your Honor, that's a straw man. Jones Day became aware because Ms. Gezzi became aware. Ms. Gezzi has notes talking about Judge Brown's order, talking about the motion to compel. Jones Day was aware because June Gezzi was aware. And
well,
they want
mean that she sent an email to the other 699 members?
That's a total straw man. We're not talking about anybody
at
Jones
Day.
That's
not a total straw man.
But June Gezzi. June Gezzi had actual knowledge. We don't need to worry about if the other 699 had knowledge. What they're doing there is they're leveraging that part of Judge Brown's opinion to try to make a point, when all Judge Brown said was, I find it totally incredible that Ms. Gezzi is standing before us, that nobody in Jones Day, including the people who worked on this case, because Ms. Gezzi came to court and said, I didn't even ask the people who worked on this case if they knew. But that's a sideshow. Ms. Gezzi knew.
The city is maybe being a little loose here in its handling of this situation, but why wouldn't you just turn around and serve a Rule 45 subpoena on Jones Day, and that raises the issue of work product privilege? And
Your Honor, the answer to that is because the city said there will be no Rule 45 subpoena necessary. You, the plaintiff, has asked us for the Jones Day documents.
Right, but then
the city...
No, go ahead, finish her.
But can the city... bind Jones Day?
The city can purport to represent that it controls Jones Day's documents.
And what authority do you have to support that proposition?
The city hired Jones Day to defend its interests. And then the city, when we said we would like all of Jones Day's documents, the city could have said one of two things. You're going to have to ask Jones Day, or we will direct our lawyer to give you all the documents. And don't forget the extra piece of this. The city did not say, we'll give you everything that Jones Day will give us. The city told the court, we're giving you everything that exists.
I understand that. I got the factual scenario. What I want to know is the case law that you have to support that position.
Your Honor,
that the city can waive a privilege that runs directly to Jones Day.
We don't rely on that argument. We don't say that the city waived Jones Day's privilege. And that's why Judge Aspin remanded. Jones Day sat on its own rights. Privileges are not self-executing. If Jones Day didn't know, they'd win. But once Jones Day learned that the city had told the court that all of Jones Day's documents are being produced to the plaintiff and none are being held back and no privileges are being asserted, more than 2 months went by with Jones Day doing nothing. And that's the crux of Judge Brown's order. It is not that the city waived Jones Day's privileges. Jones Day won that argument. The Judge Aspin said the city cannot waive Jones Day's privileges. The basis of the waiver is that Jones Day wasn't as ignorant as 95% of their brief claims to be. Judge Brown rolled up her sleeves and found out, when did Jones Day know that the city was saying, you've gotten all Jones Day's documents, Jones Day is not asserting any privileges, nothing is being held back. And Judge Brown made a factual finding that Jones Day knew, yet Jones Day sat on its rights. And privileges are not self-executing.
See, I don't know how we can find that they sat on their rights. If these five boxes of claimed work product have always remained in the possession of Jones Day, they've never turned them over to the city, how, on the basis of that record, can you find that they were relinquishing their right to claim work product?
I don't think Judge Brown had any trouble finding it, because Judge Brown found that Jones Day, through Ms. Gezzi, not through 700 lawyers, not through the law bulletin, not through checking dockets, they found that June Gezzi had notes which supported the proposition, and she made the finding that June Gezzi knew that Chicago had stood before the court and said, we are giving you everything that exists at Jones Day. Nothing is being held back. No privileges are being asserted. That doesn't work a waiver of Jones Day's privileges. But it did impose at that point, more than 2 months before Judge Brown ruled, the obligation on Jones Day to do something. And what they chose to do was lie in the weeds.
Well, the thing is, on this whole waiver thing, normally the situation we face when we've got a privilege is the point I think Judge Evans was making, is the documents have already been turned over and then we're trying to reconstruct things. But the fact that that had never been turned over, to me, suggests a different scenario.
That's why it's such a unique fact pattern that we're not seeing cases like it. Because plaintiff never would have learned about this cache of documents had not plaintiff won that motion to compel. Jones Day opted. They knew that plaintiff was operating under the assumption that no documents were being held back. They knew the court was operating under the assumption that all privileges are being waived. Jones Day let 2 months go by to see which way that motion to compel would go. They could have called out their clients and said, you know what, we got to correct something. There is a set of documents. Let's do this in an orderly set of way. Let's do a privilege log. Let's litigate it. But they remained silent. They let the court continue to operate under the assumption that nothing was being held back for 2 months. And that's the basis of the waiver. And only when plaintiff won the motion to compel, then they came in on a motion to reconsider.
And right, and then they and explained that they had all the documents, that they hadn't created the privilege log. I don't understand what the big deal is about the two-month delay either.
Well, here's what it is.
I don't understand that because now the magistrate judge has everything. Now she sees that the privilege is being asserted. They're going to do the privilege log. I just don't get it. I understand this has been cantankerous and hardly contested litigation, but...
Perhaps, Your Honor, if Your Honor had been the magistrate, you might have reached a different conclusion. But this appeal is whether Judge Brown egregiously abused her discretion in finding that Jones Day's decision to wait till after she ruled and then come in with an affidavit saying, we didn't know, we'd like to be heard on this question. And then that affidavit was disproved as a factual matter. She found, I don't believe Jones Day's position that they didn't know. I find that they knew 2 months ago and opted to sit on their rights and not assert their privileges. Did the magistrate make the kind of egregious mistake that would justify a motion to reconsider and that would justify the standard of review required to overturn Judge Aspin in finding that Judge Brown made a mistake about something that would have been so egregious to have been wrong? It's like a triple hurdle.
See, well, you characterize this as a motion to reconsider, and that always, to me, connotes that Jones Day was there the first time, and they got an adverse decision, and they came in and said, Judge, reconsider this.
They titled it.
This was the first time, yes, but it's the first time Jones Day was ever before the court.
If you accept their argument, this is their first opportunity to address the court. Judge Brown...
Well, it was the first... You agree it was the first opportunity they did address the court.
Well, I take out the word opportunity. It's the first time they did. They waited until after the order to address the court. Judge Brown found
maybe
it wasn't...
Maybe they thought they'd win. What's wrong with that?
Well, they lied in the weeds. If we would have lost, we never would have known about this cache of documents that was held back. The court never would have known about it. That's extremely troubling and extremely disturbing. They lost. Then they come in and say, hold on, we want to be heard. And they titled it a motion to reconsider, not us. They called it a motion to reconsider. And the motion to reconsider said, we need to be weigh in on this too. Granted, we waited till after you ruled, but we want to weigh in, and the reason you should listen to us is because we didn't know. And that's what all of their briefs say in this case. You know, we didn't have a chance to talk about the kind of arguments you're making. Judge Brown found, as a factual matter, she disagreed. No, you did know. You deliberately sat on your rights once you became aware that the city was taking the position that no documents were being held back, and the city was taking the position that no privileges are being asserted. And granted, that doesn't work a waiver in itself, as Judge Williams pointed out, but when Jones Day knew for a month or 2 months that this is the position its client was taking, and Jones Day then made a decision to wait until after the judge ruled before weighing in, that they'd waive their position.
Well, there was no formal notice to Jones Day. And that's, in terms of the motion to compel, correct? They were never served with the motion to compel.
And that's why we had to have a hearing. Because June Gezzi's notes on a conversation from March the 4th talk about M to C, motion to compel. They knew. And if they were right that they weren't served and they didn't know about the motion to compel, totally different appeal, and frankly, we might lose. But we had a hearing. And Judge Brown found, you know what? Ms. Gezzi's notes talking about a motion to compel, talking about an order per Brown. I make the finding that I don't believe their position, that they'd had their first opportunity to weigh on this till after I ruled.
So, and you referred to Judge Aspin's order in this, and it was one page with no explanation.
No, Your Honor. Judge Aspin, and with respect, Judge Aspin wrote a four-page order on this exact issue after Judge Brown had written a lengthy opinion. Then it went back for the hearing. And then Judge Brown wrote a very long opinion.
Right. I'm talking about his last, the one page. But that was the hearing where Jones Day had an opportunity to fully lay out their position and indicate in terms of the fact that they'd held on to the documents, that they, you know, had not had an opportunity to do the privilege. I mean, the full story came out. I understand your view of how the magistrate judge found, and I know what she found, that she found that Gezzi was not credible. But I'm still disturbed by that inaction on her part, even if we agree with the magistrate. And the magistrate doesn't, and even if we agree that the magistrate with the magistrate's credibility determination, I still don't think that reaches the ultimate question of waiver, given the significance of that privilege on this record?
If Jones Day knew.
Because what I'm worried about is the long-term implications of this as well, because that means that basically, as counsel pointed out, you could have scenarios where law firms were represented clients previously, trying to keep track of everything that's going on.
Well, on the contrary, it goes to Judge Evans's point that we can't find any authority on this. This is a unique fact pattern. You'd have to have a lawyer stand before a court and totally misrepresent that no documents existed. So therefore, don't send a Rule 45 subpoena. We're lying to the court. Nothing exists. Nothing is being held back. No privileges are being asserted. And then you have a factual finding that Jones Day knew about that. If a lawyer got caught in that situation again, then they deserve to lose. But their argument that the sky would fall in if you agreed with our position is just wrong, because this is a unique fact pattern. As far returning to the first point you made, Your Honor, about Judge Aspin entering a one-sentence order, Judge Aspin analyzed the question in his prior opinion. It was sent back to Judge Brown for a factual determination. Did Jones Day know? If Jones Day didn't know, if you can believe Jones Day's affidavits that they were really in the dark about this, then maybe they should win. Judge Brown dedicated a lot of time, and we had a hearing that lasted all day, and witnesses were presented, and Judge Brown said, I don't credit their affidavits. They knew about it for at least 2 months, that the court, was being told that nothing was being held back, that no privileges are being asserted, and they opted to lie in the weeds.
Well, I thought she made a determination that the city really had control over these documents.
Well,
that seems to be a legal determination, not a factual determination.
I think that's one of the things she talked about in her opinion. Control in the sense that the city purported to have control. We requested them. The city said, you got them.
But the city, you concede the city never had physical control.
Of these documents?
Of these documents. They
yes.
were always kept by Jones Day.
The city lied to us. The city purported to have control. I mean, and it's really quite egregious. They stood before the court and said, we'll give you everything.
That's a problem mm-hmm. between you and the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe that's Jones Day's position, is that Jones Day should take it up with the city. You know, if they're saying that the city made these misrepresentations, but again, that's not this appeal. If they didn't know, if Jones Day didn't know, then I agree with you. Then Jones Day was in the dark, the city screwed him, we should take it up with the city. But once you add that fact, the factual finding, which this court is obviously going to be loath to overturn, that Jones Day wasn't the innocent bystander that got abused here, that Jones Day knew what the city was saying to the court, how can you reward Jones Day for sitting back? And again, it's not what you would have done had you been the magistrate, of course. It is a discovery dispute. It's whether Judge Brown got it so wrong that the Court of Appeals should get involved in a discovery dispute. And I respectfully submit that Judge Brown got it right, Judge Aspin got it right, and there's no basis for this court to be finding an egregious abuse of discretion. This decision was considered, reconsidered, and considered again, and Judge Aspin got it right, and Judge Brown got it right. Anything further?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is it Schrader or Schroeder?
Schroeder, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, I mispronounced it. We have a famous hotel that used to be in Milwaukee called the
I've stayed Schrader. At that hotel. I'm not sure it still has that name.
Every time I see that name, I want to pronounce it that way.
So. Your Honor, the actual findings of the magistrate do not conform with what counsel just said. The finding that I believe he's referring to is the one on page 19 of the opinion, which says, it is apparent that no later than February 23, 2004, Jones Day had noticed that there was a pending federal case in which the police board documents had been produced and a privilege log was needed. The judge made absolutely no findings that Jones Day knew about some motion to compel or that there were deadlines or what the status of the proceedings was. In fact, the magistrate criticized Jones Day because we, quote, apparently took no action to learn of any deadlines or orders in this case. Counsel talks about a document which he says was produced, which references Judge Brown's order and motions to compel. There is no such document. What he's referencing is page JD09 of Plaintiff's Exhibit 4, which were all the documents we produced, and there's absolutely nothing on that document. What the document refers to and what Ms. Gezzi testified to was that there was a conversation on March 4th with a Hinshaw attorney where the Hinshaw attorney said that certain boxes from the Corporation Council, not Jones Day boxes, had been inadvertently produced, and that was the subject of discussion between the counsel's office and the plaintiffs. There's absolutely nothing that's in the record at any point that suggests that June Gezzi knew about some motion to compel or that the five privilege boxes were in dispute. In fact, her testimony is exactly the opposite. She didn't even know about this case called Hobley until after the April 20 order was faxed to her by Hinshaw, which is the order requiring Jones Day documents to be produced. So we would ask, Your Honor, that this order be reversed and that Jones Day not be required to give its five boxes of privileged work product material to the plaintiffs under the circumstances of this case.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to both sides. The case will be taken under advisement.